lot, she shrugged. When was the last time you saw her?
We try to avoid each other. We're roommates, not friends.
Allison plopped down on her bed, opened her backpack, and took out a laptop. That's not what I asked. No response. Decker walked over and closed her laptop. I asked you a question.
Hey, you can't do that.
Allison, would you like to continue this conversation at the station house, or can we keep it civil?
You can't take me in. I didn't do anything.
You've got sacks of drugs here, McAdams said.
That is so unfair. You know they aren't mine.
Well, someone's a serious dealer, McAdams said. There are a lot of pills in here. Allison, your roommate is missing, Decker told her. People are worried about her. Just answer a few questions, politely, and then we're out of here. When was the last time you saw Dana Berenson? The girl looked down.
I don't know. Sometime last week.
Last week has 7 days. Can you get more specific?
Wednesday, maybe.
She scratched her nose.
Maybe Thursday.
The last time she used her card swipe was Thursday afternoon. I heard she went to a party in the evening.
That sounds like Dana.
Did you see her leave for the party?
Thursday night I was in the library studying. Some students do that, you know.
Okay. You didn't go to the party. Do you remember if she slept in her bed Thursday night?
Let me think. I came home around 1. She wasn't there. I went to sleep.
She looked up at Decker.
She wasn't there when I woke up the next morning.
Did her bed look slept in?
She always tosses the top duvet over her mattress when she leaves, so I wouldn't be able to tell.
Allison bit her lip.
Why do you think she's missing?
No one has heard from her since Thursday, Decker regarded the young woman. Why don't you think she's missing?
Hey, that's my dresser,
Allison told McAdams, who was still opening drawers.
Maybe Dana hid something there, McAdams said. I'll be careful. What you're doing has to be illegal.
Decker picked up Dana's mattress.
You really don't like her, do you?
No, I don't. Then why are you rooming with her? I thought as sophomores you have choices who you live with.
I'm a transfer to Morse McKinley from Clarion, and from what I heard, no one wanted to room with Dana when they chose suites, so I got stuck with her. I've already requested a transfer, but the college is booked, and I don't feel like going back to the PMS Palace at Clarion, which is the only place that has room,
McAdams said.
School just started. You've been living with her for what, 3 weeks?
You don't understand. It's like a zoo in here. People come in at all hours wanting to buy shit. Her eyes started to tear up.
I can't do any work. I can't get any sleep. So no, I'm not concerned about her. Why should I be? She's a pain in the ass.
Decker stood up from checking out Dana's bed. Does she often disappear on the weekends?
I've only just started living with her, but she is gone a lot.
Does she have a boyfriend?
She gets around from what I've heard.
Can I take a look at your phone?
What for?
Yes or no?
What difference does it make if I say no? You'll just grab it from me.
When Decker didn't answer, she unlocked it and handed it over. He scrolled down through the phone numbers and texts. There was nothing to imply that Allison had contact with Dana. He gave it back to her.
Thank you.
The girl's eyes spilled over with tears.
I don't know why people say this is the best time of your life. I hate college. I hate everyone.
She looked down.
I'm homesick. I'm such a stupid baby.
Decker sat next to her. What's your major, Allison?
Economics, poli-sci.
She wiped her eyes.
I want to be a lawyer. My father's a lawyer. We're real close.
It's wonderful to be close to your dad. Give him a call. I'm sure he'd love to hear your voice. When my kids called from college, I was always happy to hear what was going on.
I bet your kids didn't call you all the time like I do. God, I'm stupid.
You're obviously not stupid. It's good that you stay away from Dana. She sounds problematic. To answer your question, my kids are all grown now with families of their own. But even as old as they are, they still call me and my wife whenever something's on their minds. That never changes, and I'm happy about that. She nodded. I'm sorry I was such an asshole. I'm really not that way. It's just everyone here is so tough. I need to buck up if I'm ever going to be successful. Having a thick skin is helpful. McAdams closed a drawer. But what is even more useful is sticking your nose in your studies and not getting distracted by bullshit. To Decker, he said, I don't see anything, boss, and I think I'd find something if it was there. This is one of the neatest college dorms I've ever seen. I'm compulsive, Allison said. Dana's neat, I'll give her that much, Decker said. Can we talk about Dana for a moment? I really don't know where she is. I hope she's okay. I just would be happier if she wasn't in my life. Who does she hang out with, Allison? I need to talk to some of her friends. Let me think. She wiped her eyes with her hoodie sleeve. Charlie Wetzel. He's a big druggie, but you didn't hear that from me. He lives one floor up. Jennifer Adler, and maybe Katie Dentner. I've seen them both here a few times. They live in Clarion. Friends of yours? Not hardly, but I know who they are, and I've seen them around Dana. Oh, also Mitch Law.
Right, Decker said. I've heard he's her boyfriend.
Mitch hooks up with anything that's alive. Sheep and dogs beware,
Decker smiled. So Dana and Mitch weren't exclusive.
No one is exclusive at Morse McKinley. The guys here are good-looking and a bunch of assholes.
So why did you transfer to Morse McKinley? McAdams asked. It's a great college.
You can take classes here even if you're enrolled in Clarion, McAdams said. Yeah, but I want to take the majority of my classes here, and it looks more prestigious to graduate from here than from Clarion. Plus, they have some outstanding profs here.
Like? Decker asked.
Well, Hank Carter, of course.
When Decker nodded, she said,
So you know him?
I've heard the name. Tell me about him.
He just won the May Brown Award. That was a real coup.
I don't know what that is.
It's for social consciousness and finance. That's his specialty, socially relevant capitalism. I've signed up 3 times for his intro to social government, but it's always full. And for a full-tenured professor, he's a great lecturer. Always so interesting.
So if you didn't take his class, how do you hear his lectures?
He gives a lot of free seminars. They're always full, too, but if you get there early enough, you can find a seat. He's been at Morse McKinley for a long time, and he's still as popular as ever.
Any other favorite professors? McAdams asked.
I just enrolled in Dr. Kramer's class. So far, so good.
That would be Jason Kramer?
Yes. How do you know him?
Decker said. We've been talking to people at the colleges regarding what's going on at Bogart Trail. He was one of many.
Oh, yeah, that.
She bit her lip again.
Creepy. But I heard the bodies were, like, old.
The bodies were buried years ago. The light bulb went off. Allison made a face.
You don't think that Dana, you know...
No theories, Ms. Park. All we want is for Dana to be found alive and well. Decker stood up. Thanks for your help. We may call you again if that's all right.
Of course. I wouldn't want Dana... I do want to help, and I'm sorry for the attitude.
Not a problem. And call your dad.
Yeah, thanks.
Allison's phone was already at her ear. As they left, Decker heard her say,
Hi, Daddy.
I'm going upstairs to talk to druggy Charlie Wetzel, Decker told McAdams. Could you do me a favor? You want me to find out everything I can about Hank Carter and Jason Kramer. You're getting good at mind reading. I know Hank Carter has been here for a while. Jason Kramer knew Pettigrew. He was also on our list of intersections of all three, McAdams said. The girls had taken his classes. Do you know his specialty? Psychology, but that's a broad field. I'll look up his field of interest. Isn't Rena working on charismatic teachers? She is. I wonder if Kramer's name will come up. She should be home. I'll call her up, McAdams said. You know, it would really be helpful if I could take copies of the files and study them in my free time. I have a safe in Cambridge. I'll take full responsibility if something happens. We've had the conversation. Ask Radar. He'll say to ask you. If it's okay with Mike, it's okay with me. Just be careful. We're looking for a murderer who's responsible for three bodies. Don't underestimate what he's capable of doing. I have a gun. Two guns. Don't worry. I'm into self-preservation. Okay. If it's okay with Mike, take the files with you back to school. You know, Rena invited me down for Rosh Hashanah. It's worth coming back just for her cooking. I can't believe the holidays are almost here. The year went fast. He turned to McAdams. It was a really good summer. But nothing happened. That's exactly what I mean. Chapter 24 Charlie Wetzel was fuming. Who told you about me? Her bitch of a roommate? Decker stared at the young man. 6 feet, well-built, dark eyes, dark curly hair, and a nice-looking face except for the thin-lipped sneer. He wore a red sweatshirt emblazoned with Morse McKinley in gold letters, ripped jeans, and slippers on his feet. Can I come into your room, or do you want the entire floor to hear me? Reluctantly, Wetzel stepped aside, and Decker went into the dorm room. It was messy and smelled like a gym locker. There were clothes on the floor, on the bed, on the desk, and even a few in the closets. Food wrappers and styrofoam cartons of takeout overflowed from several garbage cans. Rows of beer cans took up an entire bookshelf. Decker elected to stand rather than figure out where to sit. I'm not interested in your bad habits, Chuck. Dana Berenson is missing, and your name came up as someone who knows her. And? And I was wondering if you had any ideas about what happened to her. How would I know? I'm not saying you do. I'm asking for help. Where do you think she could be, and what do you think happened to her? Oh. Wetzel sat next to a pile of clothes on an unmade bed. You know, she's like a dealer here. I know. Any idea where she gets her stuff? He was quiet. Then he said, I don't think it's local. She's from the Boston area. I have a feeling she dealt in high school and just continued on in college. She told you she dealt in high school? Wetzel nodded. The stupidity of it all is she doesn't need to deal, you know. Her parents always give her whatever she asks for. They gave her a car on her 17th birthday, a Mercedes. She cracked it up 2 months later. You know her well. Well enough for her to tell me some things. She thought it was hysterically funny. It's not that I'm self-righteous. I take things for granted. But that kind of spoiled behavior is an anathema to me. The kid scratched his cheek. My opinion? Dealing makes her popular, gives her access to parties that she might not be invited to if she didn't bring some goods with her. She gave the stuff away or what? No, she charged, but not much. I don't think it's a commercial venture for her. Like I said, her parents give her plenty of money. How often does she go up to Boston to get the stuff? This is judging from last year, which is when I met her. Go on.
at least twice a month. How long was she usually gone? I don't keep track of her business, the kid bit his lip. Just logically, I think she'd be back on Mondays for school. But I really don't know. We're not close. It's a business relationship. I heard she gets around a beat. Maybe. Are you speaking from experience? Does it matter? It shows how well you knew her. When guys get drunk, they'll do anyone who happens to be around, and she was around a lot. But that doesn't change anything. I don't know where she is, Detective. I really don't know. Fair enough. Do you know who she's close to? She does like guys. Mitchell Law, you should talk to him. What about girlfriends? He thought about it for a minute. I saw her at several parties with Katie something who goes to Clarion. I don't know her last name. Decker looked at his notes. Katie Dentner? Yeah, that's it. She's kind of a stoner. Anyone else? Not off the top of my head. When was the last time you saw Dana? Last week, Tuesday or Wednesday. He thought a moment. You know, she told me she was running low on shit. Maybe she went up north to buy more, but that's just a guess. And you think she bought her drugs in the Boston area? I don't know, but that's where she's from. If she got waylaid anywhere, I would think it would be up there rather than down here. You don't think it's possible that something bad happened to her in Greenbury? Nothing happens in Greenbury, good or bad, except for the bodies at Bogat Trail. The boy looked blank, then wide-eyed. I thought those bodies were real old, that they were put there years ago. How many years are there in years ago? Why are you asking me about that? Isn't that your domain? Rumors are my domain as well. I don't know specifics, just that I thought I heard someone say it was like 20 years ago. Again, he looked at Decker. Not true? Not true. Eventually, it will be in the papers. We'll be asking for help following the coroner's reports on the bodies. Geez. So it's not like 20 years ago? No. I hope it's not too recent. When Decker didn't answer, Wetzel said, That would be creepy, like there's someone still out there killing people. Decker remained silent. The kid said, Oh, shit. You do think there's a killer on the loose, right? No one has ever been charged for the murders, Charlie. You can draw your own conclusions. It was past 8 in the evening by the time Decker made it home. The place was serene and quiet. Rena walked out of the kitchen. You're home. She stood on her toes and kissed him. I didn't hear you come in. Must be the dishwasher. I think there's something wrong with it. It groans like an old man. Hey, hey, hey. No reference to you, darling. You want dinner, or do you want to wash up first? I haven't been trekking through the steps. I'll take dinner first. Did you eat? No, I waited for you. I don't like to eat alone. She went into the kitchen, and Decker followed. What'd you make? Steak, salad, and if it's okay with you, let's crack open the champagne. Why the celebration? We're alone, for one thing. Tyler vacated his apartment but decided to check into a motel instead of staying here. I said he didn't have to, but he insisted. How was your day? Decker asked. I was at Hillel making arrangements for the holidays. Sure you don't want to wash up first? Do I stink or something? She hit him gently on the shoulder. When he returned, clean and in comfortable clothes, she was setting the steaks on the table along with a wooden bowl of salad. Smells wonderful. Probably won't be able to use the grill much longer. Fall is coming on. She sat down and took a steak. If you wouldn't mind opening the champagne, please.
Decker took a towel, wrapped it around the plastic cork, and popped it open. Pink. Lovely. He poured them each a glass in a cut crystal flute. Then he sat and took a steak. It had char marks on the outside and was medium rare on the inside. He was practically drooling over it even before he managed to get a piece into his mouth. It tasted as good as it looked. Fantastic. Thanks. How was your day? Any luck with finding the missing girl? Dana Berenson. Decker wiped his mouth. I talked to her parents. I spoke to several guys she hung with, a few of her girlfriends at the colleges. He shook his head. The picture isn't nice. She dealt drugs, and from what others told me, she's been dealing drugs for a while. Yikes. Do the parents know? They claimed they had no idea. On the other hand, they didn't protest my assertions with any real venom. They're worried, Rena. When I suggested that she could have been in Boston over the weekend and that may be where she disappeared from, they became even more frantic. A big city is a scary place to be missing. Cities are good at keeping secrets. Poor girl. A pause. Poor parents. It's only Monday. Is it possible she went on a bender and might suddenly show up? That would be the best-case scenario. Decker took another bite of steak, savoring each chew. If she did go traveling, road accidents are another possibility. I'm going to start checking hospitals when we're done. He took another bite. What about you? How are the arrangements for the holidays going? How many people are you up to? 150. I hate to sound cheap, but how much is this costing me? It's officially a Hillel event, so whatever I put out, they'll reimburse. Sure they will. After like a year or whatever. I'll put in the receipts right after the holiday. I do have a little news for you. For me? Didn't you ask about charismatic professors? Yes, I did, indeed. Let me get my pad. He came back and said, lay it on me. From Morse McKinley, we have Calvin Greek in the Black Studies Department, Hank Carter in Economics Poli-Sci, and Lydia Urbana in Women's Studies. In Duxbury, hold on a sec, Lydia with a Y? Yes, everything is how it sounds. Go on. Duxbury, I have Jason Kramer in psychology and James Hopshoff in poli-sci. I've met Kramer. He was the one who pointed us in the direction of Lawrence Pettigrew when we found the first body. Where did you meet him? He was helping some students out at the LGBT Center. So he's gay? I never asked him. Whether that's relevant or not, I don't know. Is there more? There is. In Littleton, we have Hortensia Balisk, who specializes in contemporary automotive design. Apparently, she is very attractive. Every year, she has a waiting list for her course. That's six. Our final candidate is Michael Palak from Clarion, Psych Department. His specialty is bias and prejudice in standardized testing. His intro to psych course is always overbooked. These are winnowed down because all of them have been at the colleges for at least 8 years, which would put them in town with your oldest body at Bogat. She handed Decker her list. I also found out where they studied. They're all Ivy Leaguers except for Hortensia Balisk, who has an engineering degree from USC, an MA in design from Otis, and worked for GM for 10 years before she came out here. I figured you're going to do your own research, so I didn't go into any great depth. This is terrific, thank you. Decker looked up. How did you get the names? I asked my students at Hillel. The association serves all five colleges, so I was able to get a good cross-section. But of course, there may be others that fit your criteria. This is an excellent start. Thank you very much. Decker paused. Do you mind if I call Tyler?
Why don't you invite him over for dessert, Peter? That way you can finish your steak.
I've stripped it pretty good, unless you want me to eat the bone.
I'll save it for the dog.
As of yet, Mina, we don't have a dog.
Not so fast.
You got a dog?
No need to panic yet, Rena smiled. Jacob called me. He and Alana are coming in for the Chagim.
That's nice. Wait, how many dogs are they up to?
3 pugs.
When Decker didn't answer, she said.
At least they're small.
Another pause.
The house will be a free-for-all anyway. It'll be fun.
If you say so.
You love Jacob and Alana.
Especially Alana.
Hey, that's my son you're talking about.
Decker laughed. He's my son as well. Jacob's a wonderful kid. He's just a little restless.
He's odd, but we love him.
At least his startup is no longer losing money.
Maybe eventually we'll even get our money back.
Better to give it to him while we're still alive.
Decker stood up.
Let me call Tyler. Don't clean up. I'll do it.
I don't mind.
No, I'll do it. My watch keeps beeping me that it's time for me to stand up anyway. He laughed. It's funny. My wife never nags, but my watch is a bitch and a half. Chapter 25. When the cell rang, it was still dark, and Decker had been sleeping deeply, dreaming about racing with either a car or a horse, or maybe it was some kind of mongrel robotic hybrid. He groped for the phone on the nightstand and grabbed it as quickly as he could, but not before Rena murmured out a, "What is it?"
"Tyler."
Decker was already up and putting on a robe. Into the phone, he said, "You okay?"
"Yeah, I'm fine," McAdams answered. "I've been looking over the names we talked about, and this is what I came up with. Do you have a pencil?"
Decker went out of the bedroom and into the living room. He turned on a lamp and looked at the time on his cell.
"It's 4:30 in the morning."
"Yeah, I couldn't sleep. Too much coffee. Are you ready?"
"No, I'm not ready."
Walking into the kitchen, he turned on the cooktop and put on a kettle of water. "Do you know that even if you can't sleep, most other people are sleeping at 4:30 in the morning?"
"Not if you work at a bakery."
"Listen, old man, if you want an apology, mea culpa. But you know that you're not going to fall back asleep, so just hear me out. Do you have a pen, yes or no?"
"I'll call you back in 5 minutes."
Decker hung up and exhaled audibly. He turned off the kettle and decided to go full on with brewed caffeinated coffee.
"Entitled little bastard."
He took out the coffee can and hunted around for the scoop. Rena came trudging out.
"I can do that."
"Go back to sleep." He turned and knocked over the coffee can. Ground spilled everywhere. "Shit." Another exhale.
"What the hell is wrong with him?"
"No sense being mad. He's just enthusiastic."
"No, he's inconsiderate. But I gave him a lot of work yesterday and he came through."
"Everyone has their good points. I'll take care of the coffee, Peter. As a matter of fact," she checked the clock, "the first batch of fresh bagels usually comes in around 5. I'll clean up the mess, make the coffee, and then fetch the bagels. You find out what he has to say, and we can have a very leisurely breakfast before we both go to work."
"How can you be so chipper after being woken up at 4:30 in the morning?"
"It's the calm before the storm. Once the holidays hit in a couple of weeks, I'll be a monster."
"You're never a monster, at least not to the guests."
"What does that mean?"
"Never mind. Don't ask the question if you don't want to hear the answer."
She pushed him out of the kitchen. "Go make your call." Instead of calling right away, Decker took the opportunity to put on sweats and slippers. He made the bed, albeit with lumps, and then took out his pad and pencil. As he was phoning McAdams, he smelled the distinct aroma of a fresh brew of Java.
What?
He barked into the phone.
You have a pencil?
Yes, I do.
What?
I'm going to ignore your peaked tone of voice and cut right to the chase. Let's talk about Jason Kramer. He's not only involved in the LGBT Center, he's also deputy chairman of the psych department at Duxbury and at Clarion.
He's got an appointment at both colleges.
He does. And get this. He's also one of the liaison faculty members for the incoming freshman classes at Clarion. Delilah Oakham was a psych major. She took his intro to psych class her freshman year at Duxbury, which is usually SRO, and it's only open to Duxbury students because psych is a popular major. When Kramer is listed as the prof, it's got a waiting list a mile long. Delilah must have pulled strings to get into the class. And Kramer's got a lot of fans, judging by the Duxbury Rate a Prof survey.
What is that?
All the colleges have them, yearly surveys of how the students feel about classes and teachers. It's the first website I went on once you gave me the list of names. Usually, the only people who have access to the five colleges' Rate a Prof website are students, but I use Malin's address. Even though she graduated, her email is still active. Colleges usually keep them active for a while before they pull the plug.
Does she know you're using her school address to access files?
Yes, Dad, I asked permission. It's malin.j.euler@needloft.edu, in case you're interested. Anyway, Kramer gets high marks for content as well as teaching. Plus, he identified Pettigrew when we first met him. So there's our link between him and Lawrence. We also know that Yvette Jones was active in the LGBT Center during her freshman year. It's certainly possible that she and Kramer crossed paths. So I would rate him a keeper on our potential killer list.
What about Erin Young?
She was working as a waitress when he was an assistant prof. Beyond that, I haven't found a link. You could probably ask around and find out if Kramer drinks at the college grill.
Okay, done. What else?
Hank Carter, of course. He's definitely up there in the charisma category. He was voted number one teacher at Morse McKinley for the last 5 years running. In addition to being a prof, and this may or may not be relevant, for the last 5 years, he has been developing a non-profit mutual fund of socially conscious investing. Every penny that the fund makes at the end of the year is dispersed to charity.
Is there something fishy about it?
Nothing came up when I did a prior lawsuit search. But usually saints are too good to be true.
I would agree. Rena brought Decker in a fresh cup of coffee.
Thank you.
You're welcome, McAdam said. I wasn't thanking you, I was thanking Rena for making me fresh coffee.
Rena's up at 4:30 in the morning?
This may come as a revelation, but she and I share a bedroom.
Tell her I'm sorry for waking her up.
Rena shouted so McAdams could hear.
Apology accepted, this time.
To Decker, she said.
I'm off to get bagels. Finish this up by the time I get back.
Do my best, he kissed his wife.
To McAdams, he said.
What else?
Hold on to your mustache, old man. I'm getting to the interesting part. About two other popular teachers. Lydia Urbana, who teaches women's studies at Morse McKinley, and Michael Palick, who is a full professor in the Clarion Psych Department with an adjunct appointment in Littleton and Morse McKinley.
Links to our victims?
Yvette took some women's studies courses at Morse McKinley. She could have easily crossed paths with Lydia. And Delilah, like I told you, was a psych major at Clarion, so she could have theoretically crossed paths with Palick. Not sure where Pettigrew fits in. I'm still looking.
Good. Is that it?
One more thing that I found interesting. Hank Carter's wife's name is Christine. Her maiden name is Urbana. She's Lydia's sister. She is. Hank Carter is Lydia's brother-in-law. And if that's not enough for you, Michael Palik is married to Lydia Urbana. He is also Hank Carter's brother-in-law. I've heard of husband and wife serial killers. I know about fraternal and sororal serial killers. Yes, FYI, sororal is the proper adjective. Anyway, I looked up family serial killers. There have been a few in history. The Benders of Kansas in the late 1800s, the Sawney Bean Clan, on which the movie The Hills Have Eyes is based. Interesting, Decker said. It's not just biology that determines a homicidal family, Harvard. Think Manson. Yeah, of course. What about the other teachers on the list? Nothing to report so far. I can't find connections between them and our victims, except that they were all teaching at the colleges when the girls went missing. But I'll keep looking. A pause. That's it for now. Good start, McAdams, but it could have waited until 7 in the morning. Whatever. What do you think about a murderous family hypothesis? Anything's possible. Come on, what do you think, honestly? The connections are interesting, but we're talking about a bunch of educated, highly educated people. Intelligence is orthogonal to evil. You know that. And if you know anything about academics, you might even say there is a correlation between the two. I'll do a little digging. You go make those phone calls. Yeah, they're on my to-do list. McAdams paused. You know, I could really use a cup of coffee. Lucky for you, there's a cafe on almost every corner of town. They don't open until 6. I guess it's off to my favorite 24-hour truck stop, Paul's. Don't blame me if I smell like bacon and sweat. It's not me, it's the company I keep. The profiles of serial killers over the centuries ran the gamut of race, religion, socioeconomic status, intelligence. Most killers were from disturbing backgrounds that included sexual and physical abuse. But some were spawned from intact families with nothing to suggest a bad seed in the making. Pairs who killed, siblings, friends, and couples, usually came from highly dysfunctional and sadistic backgrounds, like Rosemary and Fred West. But there were exceptions. Carla Homolka, for instance, was an attractive, middle-class, popular teen. When she hooked up with Paul Bernardo, she became monstrous, arranging the rape and murder of her younger sister Tammy as a Christmas present for her psychopathic husband. Serial-killing blood-related families, there weren't a slew to draw from, tended to be poor and uneducated, usually living in isolated rural areas. Within the family, strict rules were enforced, and frequently parents carried out acts of sadism and incest with their children. Away from the prying eyes found in cities and towns, the clans committed barbaric acts including torture, dismemberment, and cannibalism. By the time Decker closed the computer, it was 8 in the morning. He had spent sunrise reading synopses of some of the most notorious, depraved human beings in history. He sat back in his desk chair at the station house and exhaled in a whoosh, trying to rid his body of all the poison he had just ingested. 3 bodies were buried up at Bogat Trail, and every possibility of how they got there was up for consideration. Although professors were sometimes petty and backbiting, especially in pursuit of tenure, a family of sexual serial killer academics seemed a little far-fetched. Besides, Carter, Urbana, and Palik all had tenure. As interesting as the theory was, the workday had started, and Dana Berenson was still missing. It was the living before the dead. All morning, Decker and McAdams did a block-by-block canvas, showing people her picture, trying to get a toehold on Dana's whereabouts. When luck proved to be elusive, Decker spent the afternoon calling up police stations, jails, hospitals, and morgues from Greenbury to Boston. 3 hours into the search, a morgue near Boston reported an unidentified beaten female body brought in 2 days ago. The age and race fit, and Decker asked for a photo. 20 minutes later, he was emailed a bloated, lacerated, and bruised face. The features were hard to distinguish, but eye color doesn't change. Dana's were brown. The body had eyes with blue irises. At 4 in the afternoon, after another 3 hours of phone calls, he finally found another possibility. After being placed on hold numerous times, he was put through to the ICU at St. Beatrice, a small hospital 75 miles north of Greenbury in the tiny New England burg of Marison in Massachusetts. "One-person car accident," the nurse told him. Her name was Edie Ahrens. "The car went down a steep embankment and caught fire, but somehow the driver got out and crawled to safety. She was brought in Sunday afternoon, and she was unconscious. I don't know how long she'd been out there." Decker's eyes narrowed. "The car caught fire?" "That's what I was told." No matter how many times it happened in movies, it was rare for cars to explode on impact. The fuel was there, that is, gasoline, but conflagrations usually required a heat source to get the fire going. Something like matches, or even better, a torch. The nurse was still talking. "The accident could have happened any time over the weekend. Regardless of when it happened, she was brought in Sunday afternoon." "And she's still unconscious?" "She's in a deep sedation to reduce the swelling on the brain." "Is she going to make it?" "Touch and go." "And she didn't have any ID on her?" "Like I said, the car burned. Probably along with her ID." "But she managed to escape and crawl to safety." "Miracles do happen." "I'm sure. So if she was unconscious, who called it in?" "I don't know, but I do know that traffic is looking into it." "Who in that area does the collision report?" "That would probably be the Massachusetts State Police, but I'd start with the Marison Sheriff's Department first. Less bureaucracy. They usually coordinate with MSP. We get a fair number of crashes along that stretch of road because it's dark and can be slippery in winter. Of course, it wasn't winter. Anyway, try them. You need a phone number?" "I have Massachusetts State Police. I can look up the Marison Sheriff's Department. Thank you, though. Could you text or email me some description of your victim? Eye color, hair color, things like that?" "Sure. Also, is there a way you can send a picture? I have a set of very concerned parents." "It isn't pretty." "I was a homicide detective for 30 years. I can handle it." "You wouldn't want to show it to the parents." "And I won't." At that moment, McAdams walked in. Decker waved. "I'm not bad at facial recognition. If it's close, the parents will want to drive up and see for themselves. Actually, they shouldn't be driving. I'll arrange a car." "Do you have a picture of what she looks like normally?" "I do. I'll email it to you." After they exchanged cell numbers and email addresses, Decker said, "Before I tell the parents anything, let's compare pictures and have another conversation." "Sure, and I hope this is your girl." "Thank you. I hope so too, but whoever she is, I hope she recovers soon." Decker hung up. "You found Dana Berenson?" McAdams asked. "Possibly. Where were you?" "Talking to Lindsay Terrahout and Caroline Agassi." "Erin Young. Learn anything?" "Nope. Caroline does talk a lot, but both of them seemed honest. They don't know what happened. What's going on with Dana?" Decker gave him a recap. "You know, Harvard, maybe you should go up north and start preparing for school. I may need you up there." "Trying to get rid of me." "I'm sorry I called you early, okay?" Decker laughed.
No, Tyler, I'm being honest. I may need your help as a liaison up north. Actually, I was thinking about settling in over the weekend. Good. It would serve both our needs if you did. Sure you're not trying to get rid of me? Not this time, amigo. Not this time. It was a 2014 Honda Accord sedan. There was enough framework still left to determine make and model. Light gray paint on the exterior and black leather in the interior. Over the phone, Decker was talking to Bird Hyssops, the Massachusetts detective assigned to the car accident. That matches my missing persons vehicle. We've towed the car to the lab and we put a team on it. Is something off kilter? Why do you ask? Because you towed the car to the lab, unless that's your usual procedure. It's not, Decker said. I thought it sounded off when I first heard about the accident. Even going over an embankment, cars usually don't catch fire. Interiors burn. They have soft material that's flammable, but it takes a very high temperature to burn metal. Well, since you asked, I'll tell you what we found, Hyssops told him. But first, I'll tell you what we didn't find. A license plate. We found a frame, but no license plate. That's not good. No, it's not. Plus, traffic didn't find any skid marks. There were tire tracks going over the embankment, so it's possible that she fell asleep at the wheel. No sudden move, no skid marks. But the treads on the tracks looked like the tires were rotating very slowly, not moving at high speeds. Someone pushed it over. It's one scenario, especially if the burn turns out to be arson. State has towed the car from the scene and put investigators on it. Whatever happened, it's a miracle that the girl is alive. A pause. She is still alive, right? Yes, but she's in critical condition. Decker was writing as he talked. So you think you're dealing with the collision as an attempted murder? Nothing is definite until we get all the reports back, but that's what it looks like to me. Could you find a VIN number anywhere? It would be confirmation. We're working on it, Hyssop said. Want to tell me about the girl? Her name is Dana Berenson. She's a student at Morse McKinley. That's one of the colleges in Greenbury. Yes. We get lots of students driving that road. It's more direct, but often it isn't any faster because it's two lanes and very dark. I keep asking the state for more road lights, but bureaucracy is slow to the point of slothful. Anyway, that's not important in this case because I don't think this was an accident. What's your interest in this case? The colleges asked Greenbury police to help find the girl. There are things I need to tell you about this girl that will probably be relevant to your case. She has a reputation as a dealer. Decker recapped what he knew about Dana Berenson. And she dealt up north? That's what several people told me, whether it's true or not. I'll check it out. There's one more thing. I'm listening. You must know that Greenbury is working on a series of unsolved murders. I thought those bodies were old. They are not recent murders, no. But the victims are all students at the colleges, and the buried bodies were discovered in the same area, Bogat Trail. We're probably looking at serial killings. We don't have any suspects, but our thinking is that it's someone local and someone associated with the colleges. So how does she fit into this? I don't know that she does. We haven't a clue to the killer's identity, so he may still be active in the area. I'm just thinking that since Bogat is now off-limits, maybe the killer is trying something new. Makes more sense if he just buries the bodies elsewhere. Of course, that would be logical. There are acres of virgin woods out here. But now all eyes are on activities in the woods, and Dana is a college student who, like the others, seemed to vanish into thin air. I'd be interested in any forensics you pull up, regardless of how large or small. I'll make a note of it. Are you going to notify the parents? Yes, I've already booked a car to take them to the hospital. Thanks for your help. Good luck, Hyssop said. Regardless of the outcome, I'll keep in touch. Decker said goodbye, hung up, and blew out air. He grabbed his coat and went over to the inn at the colleges. It wasn't as bad as a death notification, but it was painful. After the expected moans, groans, and cascades of tears, Decker managed to convince Larry Berenson to take the provided car service rather than drive the 75 miles to the hospital. Afterward, Decker went back to the station house, called Morse McKinley, and updated the college. Then he filed a mountain of paperwork. Home by 10, he was tired, grumpy, and famished. An hour later, he was in bed, showered and fed, with a book about the founding fathers of America in his hand. He was reading words, but not comprehending anything, because his mind had wandered from Dana Berenson's accident to the Bogat bodies to the teachers that McAdams had singled out. Rena got into bed and crawled under the covers. Sleepy? A little. We got up at 4:30 in the morning. How could you not be zonked? My brain won't turn off. I could talk to you about my day. That usually puts you to sleep. Come on, now. He put the book on his nightstand. Play nice. At least one of your cases was solved. Yes, it looks like we found Dana Berenson, but we're far off from solving the case. Decker gave her an update. Rena was wide-eyed when he was done. You really think it's related to Bogat? I don't know, Rena. Superficially, no, but right now I'm not about to rule anything out. Is Dana Berenson's accident even your case? The crime is not in my jurisdiction. It isn't even in the state of New York. But she was my case to begin with, so I'm sure they'll extend me a courtesy. The dude on the phone sounded reasonable. Will she even make it? I certainly hope so. I'm working with so many unknowns. Like Erin Young. I don't know if she's alive or dead. They haven't found any more bodies in Bogat? No. So maybe she is alive. If she is alive, she left without taking anything, meaning she was scared to death. Like we said, maybe she was the lucky one. Rena's voice was hushed. You'll solve it. You think? Yes, I think. And you think too much. Try to get some sleep. I suppose I should. He kissed her goodnight and turned off the lights, his mind slowly drifting off with images of bloated faces, mangled metal, boxed graves filled with bones and bodies, all of it ripped out of his current and former case files. Chapter 26. Calling for an appointment didn't mean getting an appointment. Decker knew from his last murder case that college professors could be very elusive. He left messages with Michael Palak at his office at Clarion, for Lydia Urbana at Morse McKinley College, and for Jason Kramer at Duxbury. With that done, he regarded the boxes that held files from the disappearances of Pettigrew, Oakham, and Jones. He also took out the newly minted murder books for each of the three victims. Often it helped to compare old and new. The first time that Decker had read the missing person files, he had started with Oakham and worked backward. This time he decided to start with Jones and work forward. He had previously filled the pages with post-its, and it annoyed him that he was still asking the same questions. He hadn't learned anything new or spotted a different avenue of detection. Even after he talked to the professors, he doubted that he'd come away with something meaningful. Cold cases were the worst, but when you got a solve, they became the best. By 10:30 in the morning, he was prematurely tired and hungry and still in the dark. He took out his tuna sandwich from the station house fridge, filled his coffee cup, and opened up Erin Young's missing person file. As usual, he ate too fast. He looked up from the pages and saw Kevin Butterfield hanging up from a phone call. He was tall and bald and had been with Greenbury PD for over 12 years. Kev?
Yo!
Are you familiar with someone named Quentin Newhouse? Quentin Newhouse? He's in Aaron Young's files. Oh, yeah, him. We call him QVC. The homeless guy who sells junk at the underpass to the highway. Hence the name QVC. What do you want with him? Why was he interviewed in connection with Aaron Young? Let me see the pages. Decker handed them to Kevin, who said, Yeah, now I remember. He was selling a pair of sandals that looked like the ones Aaron's roommate described her as owning. Were they the same sandals? Nothing to say yes or no. He paused. We have Aaron's DNA on file, but we didn't test the sandals at that time. She was a grown woman with not a lot of ties to Greenbury. She could have left of her own accord. She didn't take anything with her. Rumors said she lifted money from her previous job. If she took money from her new boss, that could explain her sudden departure. Absolutely. Kevin thought a moment. The sandals are still in evidence. We could have them tested. Yeah, let's do that. Decker's eyes reread the interview. He said he found them in a dumpster, and you went back and checked the dumpster. Yes, I remember that very clearly. We didn't find anything else that clued us into Aaron's disappearance, but I'll tell you what I did do. I took a lot of the paper from the dumpster. Not the garbage, but the shit that people usually throw away. Useless mail, old receipts, things like that. It's all in the evidence room if you want to take a look. If you pull out the sandals, I'll get them tested. Maybe, thanks. Decker paused. Do you think if I go see Q, he might be able to remember anything about the case? He's usually pickled. That was the problem we had with him. But be my guest. Sometimes you catch him on a good day and he's pretty lucid. I'm not getting anywhere and I have nothing better to do. Decker stood up and took his jacket from the back of the chair. Besides, you never know what wares the guy has from dumpster diving. It was the first gray day outside, but the September air was still mild. As a native Floridian and transplant Angeleno for the last 60-plus years, Decker was still acclimating to the changes of seasons. Most normal people gravitate toward hot climates as they age. He and Rena went in the opposite direction, but he didn't mind. In fact, he liked the cold. There was nothing better than curling up in front of a fire with a good whiskey and reading a great book. It was a luxury of his dotage. No small, runny-nosed, noisy children underfoot who needed to be dressed and undressed every time they went outside to play. During the summer months, there was a small homeless camp at the underpass. When the days got shorter and the temperature dropped, some of them moved into the homeless shelter that provided a comfortable bed and 3 squares a day. But there were rules. No booze, no illegal drugs. The tenants were required to make up their beds, shower, and take their meds. Some capitulated. Others evaporated, only to materialize at the underpass in the following year's thaw. Gray days like this one were arrows pointing the population to warmer places with a tolerant police presence. The area was empty except for a man sitting on the dirt with a blanket spread out in front of him. On top of the cloth was junk that he apparently felt was valuable. Q could have been anywhere from 30 to 60, so Decker split the difference and placed him around 45. The homeless man had a straggly gray beard, a lined face, and hair that was partially combed and partially matted. He had red-rimmed blue eyes and thin lips, and repeatedly jerked his head to the left as if beckoning someone to come hear a secret. Hey, Q.
Hey, mister.
Where is everyone? Q shrugged. He gave Decker a smile with a mouthful of yellow teeth and jerked his head to the side. He pointed to his junk with a loving gesture.
Need something?
What you got?
Take a look.
Decker tried to find something that wasn't too dirty or too broken. The closest he came was the head of a hammer without the handle. He could turn it into something useful. He bent down and picked up the head. What about this?
It's a good one.
How much?
For you, $5.
I'll give you a dollar, and that's nice of me. When Q waved him off, Decker said, I'm not paying $5.
Four.
Two.
Three.
Two.
All right, all right.
Another jerk of the head. Decker pocketed the hammerhead and gave the man $2. Q took the bills with dirty hands.
So what do you really want, mister?
The man was a homeless alcoholic and probably mentally ill, but some native intuitiveness was still there. I'm a cop.
Yeah, I know you're a cop. You're looking right at me. Most people look away. What do you want?
Do you remember a missing woman named Erin Young? She disappeared from here about 4 years ago. Q jerked his head.
I never hurt no one.
I believe you. Do you remember Erin?
Don't think so.
His eyes shifted downward. Decker knew he was lying. He said, She worked as a cashier for the Circle M Mart. Her mother lives about 3 miles away from here in the woods, Corrine Young. I'm sure you know Corrine. Decker paused. She gives you some food and a little nip now and then, right?
Yeah, so what's the harm?
No harm. So now that you remember Corrine, do you remember Erin? A pause. Erin was Corrine's daughter. Q nodded his head.
She was nice. She worked at the mart, yeah.
Right. Did she also give you things?
Sometimes.
Food? When Q nodded, Decker asked, What else?
Once she gave me a pack of batteries. Said they were expired and weren't no good. Even so, I put them in my flashlight. It worked. So there you have it.
Good deal.
Mama didn't raise a fool.
Decker smiled. So you must remember when she went missing. Q jerked and nodded.
Now I do, yeah.
The police talked to you about it.
I didn't hurt her. I didn't hurt no one.
I know. But you do remember that the police talked to you.
Yeah, I remember. I'm not retarded, you know.
But you are cagey, Decker thought. What did they talk to you about?
They talked to me about the shoes.
Decker stared at him. Right. The sandals. Do you remember where you found them?
Where I find everything. In the dumpsters.
Do you remember which dumpster? Q shook his head.
Don't think so.
How many dumpsters do you have? Q shrugged.
More than one.
Five? No answer. 10?
Between 5 and 10,
Q answered.
I remember showing the police where I found the shoes, so go ask them about it, Mr. Cop. Your own guys took them from me and they didn't even pay. That's stealing.
They thought they were Erin's sandals.
It's still stealing, and like I told you, I didn't hurt her.
There was nowhere for Decker to go with the questioning because what Q said was true. He had taken them to the dumpster, and the police had combed through the garbage. Unless he was deliberately lying about the specific dumpster, he pointed out. Still, it felt like the man was holding back. Decker thought for a moment. Q, in the dumpster where you found the sandals, did you find anything else? The homeless man narrowed his eyes.
I didn't hurt her.
I believe you. What else did you find? When Q didn't answer, Decker said, I'm not going to arrest you. I'll even pay you for the sandals, but I need your help. Please answer me. Did you find anything else?